Are we on, Robin? We'll call the Sussex County Council meeting October the 4th to order. First thing will be approve the agenda. Mr. Baker?
Yes, I just have one suggested change, and that is regarding executive session. We can delete job applicants' qualifications, personnel, and land acquisition from the executive session items.
Okay. Anything else from council?
I move we approve the amended agenda.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the agenda as amended. Any questions on the motion? Now we'll
you start now.
Take the thank you. We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carries. In our packets, we had the minutes from September 13th and September 20th. Any questions or changes to either one of those items? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, Mr. President, I have one letter to share. And this was to Councilwoman Joan R. Deaver. We at Open Arms would like to take the time to thank you for the generous donation of $500 to our food pantry. Over 144 families are being served per month. Again, thank you very much, Open Arms Food Pantry.
Open Council, anything? Mr. Baker, County Administrator.
Yes, the first item is discussion and possible introduction of an ordinance regarding windmills and wind turbines. And I have a handout of a suggested ordinance, which is slightly different from what you had in your packet. But the main idea is basically the same. Last week, we discussed the some possible additional changes to the windmill ordinance, and as you're aware, last month the County Council approved an initial ordinance regarding windmills. I also have a copy of the ordinance that was approved last month, which I'll also hand out. This second one has already been approved. The revisions that were prepared here apply basically for property less than 5 acres. There's one section one where one windmill is now allowed if less than 100 feet on properties less than 5 acres. This proposal would allow us an alternative to add up to 3 windmills less than 50 feet on a property less than 5 acres. It also adds, as per the state law, a couple other items which are already in state law, but we thought it might be clearer if we put them here also, so they are included, and that is what is shown as section 2, 9, 10, and 11 on the new draft ordinance, that all new electric lines to wind turbines should be placed underground. That's state law. No advertising decorative items shall be placed on the turbines or their support. And then number 11 is if the windmill is within 200 feet from a building on a National Register of Historic Places, then there's certain shrubbery and whatnot that needs to be surrounding it. And that's all in state law, but we thought it might be a little cleaner if we had it also in the county code.
Good idea.
The next part of this, section 3, pertains to windmills in areas that are properties greater than 5 acres. And what we're suggesting in section 3 is that for greater than 5 acres, there would be a maximum number of windmills of one per 5 acres, or a maximum of 5 on the property. If someone wanted more than 5, they could go to the Board of Adjustment to get approval for more than 5, so that there would be a limit on the number of windmills. One of the things, I was talking with Mr. Moore and Mr. Lank earlier today, we might suggest even a little bit of a language change. If one of the concerns is that for windmills less than 50 feet on properties greater than 5 acres. It didn't seem like we had any limit on them. So if we change the language here a little bit, in section 3, number 7, the last sentence, where it says if more than 5 such, we'd strike such, and then continue with wind turbines are proposed on a parcel, and we add after turbines of any height, then basically that would cover, if you want more than 5 windmills on a property, you've got to go to the Board of Adjustment if it's greater than 5 acres. So we don't have that differentiation. Because right now there could be an interpretation that says that if this was approved as initially written, then there'd be no limit on windmills of less than 50 feet on properties greater than 5 acres.
So now there is a limit.
Mm-hmm. So this okay. would put
That's
a
good,
limit.
Right? I think there needs to be. Right? Mm-hmm. Seems to be reasonable.
Any questions of council about this proposed ordinance?
And there is in section 4, I might add, that is for industrial zoning districts. It mainly pertains to windmills 200 feet or greater, where we would also have this suggested a change in that if they want more than 5 or 1 per 5 acres, if they want more than 5, they go to the Board of Adjustment for approval. And also we would suggest the same change in the language under section 4, number 10. So we would say if more than 5 and then strike the word such and then say wind turbines and then add of any height are proposed. So again, even if they want, you know, we'd have a limit on the number, which no matter how high they are, basically, there would be 5, if it's greater than 5 acres, an industrial zone, or basically greater than 5 acres, no matter what the height, we would have a limit of 5, and then they could go to the Board of Adjustment for a special use exception if they wanted more than 5.
So they would come in under industrial zoning, is what you're saying?
They could. I mean, the industrial zoning is mainly for windmills greater than 200 feet, mm-hmm, more like right. a windmill farm type thing. But this would, in this suggested change for properties greater than 5 acres, no matter basically what it's zoned, we would allow 1 per 5 acres or a maximum of 5 for the parcel. And if you wanted more than 5, you could go to the Board of Adjustment to request a special use exception.
And there's no way to keep from having to go to the Board of Adjustment? I mean, nothing we can do within our code to, I mean, you know.
Well, Mr. Lank, you probably correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think there's a limit on the number of windmills allowed on properties greater than 5 acres.
I'm not saying we shouldn't have a limit. I just don't like to see so many things going to the Board of Adjustment when maybe we could okay. you know, deal with it right
that was one item that we discussed. We had a meeting Friday about the proposed ordinance as to whether or not this should go to the board or could be considered conditional use, which is of course a little more complicated. It goes to the
PNB
and they will come to you. So go ahead. Why don't you explain, Lawrence?
We didn't know whether, in the discussion Friday, we didn't know whether we would be, the council would make that decision, whether or not they wanted it to go to the conditional use process or whether they wanted it to go to the Board of Adjustment.
Why not the conditional use? What was the pros and cons on that?
Well, really, it's in the case of you're dealing with a number.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when it's a number, it's more of a variance than it is.
Okay.
The use is accepted. It's just they want more than what we permit. So
right.
When I say it's just a number.
Special. The when you have the number, like it says, more than 5 wind turbines of any height shall go to the board, then it's clear that it has to go to the board, and it could be reversed. It could be the conditional use process. Do you want the commission to hear it and the council to hear it?
It
seems more
it become
appropriate that it goes to the board, for okay. being it's dealing with numbers, because they're permitted up to 5. Okay. So you're dealing with a number that's greater.
So at what point would that be, that kind of application be an application for a utility?
Well, this just references a number. So whether it's a utility or not, it would be it's based on a number. So the number is exceeding 5. Kind of, it's really up to council. Or they feel if it's if you wanted to address it as a utility, we'd add another section and reference that if it's a public utility reference, which includes water, sewer, electrical substation, treatment plants, that type of thing. We could incorporate a utility wind farm or a utility solar farm if it's being used to generate electricity. Or you just use the number again, and we're using the number.
Wouldn't it, like, a utility is providing a service to outside the, you know, the area that they've got the zoning on, or so. In other words, then the if it's not a utility, then it's the guy. If a guy's using it for a chicken house, he's using it on site. He's benefiting on site. If you benefit off site, that could be a utility, I guess.
They're also selling back to the utility.
Well, I mean, that goes, yeah, but I'm still saying
they go back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I mean, it's almost that the.
But you
to give the same consideration.
I'm just thinking a utility would still have more of a public type of benefits where.
Yeah, it's going to be larger.
Even though you're selling your utility or your service or your electric back to them, that's only benefiting that private user, not a number of users like a co-op or something like that. I mean, I think it would be easy to determine what's what.
We have a
could be a surplus
situation, not with
a surplus to go back, but it still benefits that one user.
That's what I'm saying. That'd be, it's sort of you're using your own electric, but you just get rid of a little bit of surplus.
Right.
And
right.
I think you're going to be on the short end of the stick on a surplus deal.
But if the surplus is using a number of people, you know, benefiting a large number of people, then it's a utility. If it's only benefiting that one property owner, then
I'll just put that for that purpose.
Right, right.
Well, you would, and I don't know this, but I would be very hard-pressed to believe that this does hold it to a max of 5. I'd be hard-pressed to believe a utility is only going to put 5 of them up.
Yes, I'm saying you can't do it.
They're going to put a lot of them, I would think. Right. Most wind farms I've seen are numbers of them. I mean, 50, 100, whatever they are.
It's going to be a large tract, too.
Sure.
It's not just going to be a small
tract. And the board still provides for a public hearing where people can speak out for or against the proposal. So then it should be obvious also if it's the intent is a utility or, you know, private use. So I think there's enough safeguards to figure it out.
Question, Mr. Lank?
And if they're applying for more than 5, then that's a different situation. I understood we were looking at more than 5.
We are.
Right.
Yeah, we're looking at more than 5.
Limited to 5, Mike. I'm missing.
No, the way it's proposed is more than 5 wind turbines of any height are proposed, then there's a special use exception.
Right.
The state law only references residential.
Right, goes to the Board of Adjustment. Uh-huh.
Right.
State, yeah. The state law only references residential, didn't reference the other zonings.
I guess my question is, if it's more than 5, say if it's 10 or 20, and they want to sell to the neighbors, what's involved there? Is that something that the Board of Adjustment is?
If you don't include a reference in the code that a wind farm as a utility is going to require conditional use, then it's going to go under the special use exception clause of being more than 5 windmills, wind turbines.
But you could do that then?
Yeah. The way it's written, you could. It doesn't limit it. It just says more than 5.
Do we want to get involved in that?
That's what we're asking you.
I'm asking you.
I really don't think that anybody puts up 1 is going to go ask for 2, because I think they're going to find this is a losing proposition. That's what I think. And I think you'll find out as time goes along here that windmills are not going to be very profitable.
Well, we went
the way windmills are going to be profitable is if it's blue water wind, if we're forced to buy from them and run our kilowatts from 7.5 cents to 15, 20 cents, it might become profitable that way. That's the only way it's going to be profitable. There's no way we can buy a generator, and it's been proven by other people and by electrolyte companies and other people that these windmills are not profitable. So as private citizens, we're not going to have to worry about that anyway. I think one person would go buy one, he'd have all he wants of it, because he'll soon learn that he don't need 2, because one loser is enough. He won't need 2.
I mean, if oil goes to $400 a gallon, it might be profitable.
Yeah, it's going to have to be really ridiculous.
Approximately, I'll say approximately because I'm not sure of the dates, but about 20 years ago, maybe a little bit more, actually a little bit more, we went through the windmill and wind turbine too, but they were all called windmills back then, where people proposed, went through the board, got a variances for the height to allow for windmills, typically residential, and as we're dealing with them, and they kept them for 6-8 years, and they all came down.
Right.
The one I remember the most, Vance would know about, it's Mr. Brock had one in his side yard right there at Highwood Park outside of Laurel.
Dr. Wagner had one.
And Dr. Wagner. Dr. Wagner was actually selling them, I believe.
Yes, he was.
So, yeah, there was several, and there was several applications for it, and then pretty much they've all been taken down.
They're losers.
I think I said a gallon. I meant per barrel.
But they're not prevented.
Well, you probably gallon.
Keep in mind that Mr.
What's the pleasure, Council? I want to introduce this ordinance, or you want to just forget about it?
I think we should. Could I ask if there's any windmill experts here? I know I had a call from a couple folks.
Experts. Okay.
Gentlemen that have spoken in the past. Chair that we acknowledge them? Do you want to come up and just tell us if we're missing anything here? Are you Greg or you're Greg?
And keep in mind, Mr. Wilson's opinions are Mr. Wilson's opinions on windmills.
I respect his opinion.
Oh, easy.
Greg Minosh, Dagsboro, Delaware, 25732 Timmons Lane. And I just received this morning, so I haven't had a whole lot of time to really review it. But there were a couple things on here that I do question, have some concern with. Section on the first page, section 2, number 8, give you a little idea about obviously the industry. You're trying to capture wind as much as possible. My issue is over the 50-foot height limitation. The smallest tower now that I can purchase is 45 feet. The blade length is 6. By the time you add the foundation, which is has a small concrete foundation that is exposed out of the ground where the anchor bolt's attached to, I don't even have to go any further than that, and I've already exceeded the 50 feet. So now, all this in the last year and a half and trying to get this thing through, which had put a total stop to my business, now you're going to limit my business again by putting a 50-foot restriction.
What's the right number, in your opinion?
If anybody's been over to the community college, I just put a 60-foot tower up there. So that's 60 plus 65 if anybody wanted to go that height. Usually most people and residents, you know, financially they're looking at the 45-foot system. So 45 plus the 6, you're at 51, 55, 57 feet. That'll stay under the 60 feet and still allow the industry to use, you know, what's out there to try to capture as much wind as possible. So that's my biggest concern.
So if we just change 50 to 60, you're saying that would cover most residential type of use?
Correct.
Which is primarily what we're, I think, addressing through this ordinance.
Yes, sir. 50 feet, you just automatically just cut off. You know, my manufacturer realized that the 33-foot pole just wasn't capturing enough wind. So they raised it to 45 feet, and by doing that, with just that extra additional length, you allow the resident to capture as much as possible. So that would be one small change, and I think really when you're looking up 10 feet, you're probably hardly even going to recognize from the ground. But it does allow the customer the ability to put something up to help them. My next question is number 9 right underneath of that, and it says all new electric lines. Now, I may be reading this too much, but does electric lines, blank, does that include the disconnect, or is that only the line that's running from the wind turbine to the home or shed where the electric box is? Because my manufacturer, and I think code recommends that a disconnect be at the wind turbine or within line of sight within, I think, 100 feet, 150 feet. So if a disconnect at the base of the tower is included in the definition of all new electric lines, that would go against the issue of number 9.
I believe that was a matter that was in the state law that was...
That's exactly how it reads in state law.
Yes. Is that correct, Mr. Lank? That pulls from the state law.
I thought this one came right from the state code.
But it does it include the disconnect or not?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't think state law does either.
Okay. That's just what my question was. And of course, presenting it now would be a lot better than having to go back later and say... Well, that needed to be readdressed.
Well, I will remind council that when we introduce an ordinance, we'll read the short title, and any amendments can be made as a result of the public hearing that does not change the short title. And in this case, it simply states that it is amending and gives us sections, which at the public hearing would give us the ability to change things like the height that was brought up and other items.
How about the number 10, the decorative items? Do you find that people would like to decorate their windmills?
No, I haven't found that at all to be the case. I mean, I think it makes it cleaner, a site if you don't have signs and banners stringing off of, you know, off of the system. The other is, you know, there are other manufacturers that have bigger blade lengths. It might be a great safety issue by having that in there, because now somebody's not going to try to get up there when the blades are actually turning and try to add signage or, you know, pole decorations or anything like that. So I think it keeps it a cleaner, more attractive, aesthetically looking system by not having signage and banners and anything else attached to it.
That was another item that was in the state law.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't do it right.
The other section under section 3, number 7, there's still the 50 feet that has pretty much been copied and pasted through the issue.
Right.
Proposed draft. What I do have some concern over is in number 7 is, again, we're back to only allowing one system on 5 acres of land. 5 acres of land is pretty big. I mean, there was one where you could have three on less than three on in section 2, three on less than 5 acres.
Well, in the difference there, that in the other one it was less than 60 feet, and this is more than 60 feet.
Right. That's right. The section 3 is related to basically the 100 to 200 foot.
See that?
To the what?
Okay, 100
to 200. We have 100 to 200 above. Mm-hmm. So B is section 3 relates to B, which is the 100 to 200.
Mm-hmm. More than 50 feet, mm-hmm. which we're going to change, and possibly we may change to 60 feet.
Yeah, okay. More than 60 feet.
Right.
Okay.
I think that was it then, if that included the between the 100 and 200 foot.
Yeah, it does. And then C included 200 or above.
Okay.
We don't think we're seeing too many of those.
No, I don't think
now,
so.
We're not going to get a manufacturer in now after we adopt this and say, wait a minute, the minimal I can buy for my guy is, you know, such and such. I need 65 feet.
Well, that'd be the public hearing there. But
right.
Okay. This is just so we can
just
go.
Just to introduce.
See, yes.
Right. We can't go higher, though, if we got this 60 feet in there. We can go lower. Right? We can't be more.
Well, a strict reading of the state statute concerning introduction of ordinances indicates that you can amend as long as it does not amend anything that's in the title or change anything that's in the title, as long as it's covered in the title. And this short title simply says that we are amending, and it gives the sections that we're amending, because that gives people public notice that they can come and discuss those sections. Okay. We have always taken, I think, a very conservative approach that we try to not expand something as opposed to reduce it. Yes,
you're
we can.
Saying now that, okay, so we're making a change here of the way we address things. We can do it now, you're saying, under this current
yes, and matter of fact,
opinion.
I had stated that before on another occasion, that we are allowed to amend as long as it's within the title.
Right.
Although in the past, there's always been a policy by this council and previous councils.
But the policy ever was based on, I think, advice from our other legal counsel. So different attorney, right?
Yes.
So I'm sure we could get an attorney here to argue that. But you're comfortable,
right,
as our current county attorney, that we could do this? Okay.
Yes, and I have discussed this with the prior counsel too concerning this exact issue, and they had indicated that there had always been a comfort level with restricting. That was a very conservative approach. However, the statute as written states as long as it is within what's in the short title, that the public notice is given.
We'll go with that current advice.
Can we, today, before it's introduced, can we make that change from 50 to 60 feet?
If you make that change, it has to be in writing, because under the code, when you introduce, it has to be in writing such that it's enabled to be passed at that time. So you would need to have something in writing so it could be handed to the clerk and posted immediately.
Well, I mean, with what's been said about modifying at the public hearing, I'm kind of comfortable introducing it like this.
Okay.
Well, I think, yeah, let's move on with it.
I can make the changes.
Let's move on with it.
Okay, I'll introduce it.
Okay.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time.
Be sure to come back during the public hearing to refresh us.
If it's going to be introduced, I would suggest that we actually read the short title first and then
please do that, Mr. Moore.
And make sure I've got the right one. An ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County by amending Article 25 relating to wind turbines and windmills in Sussex County.
Mr. Phillips.
I'll introduce it.
Mr. Phillips introduces it. Thank you, sir. Next, Mr. Becker.
Yes. The next item is discussion and possible introduction of an ordinance regarding redistricting plan, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Moore. We have copies.
Yes, being passed is the ordinance that I have drafted to follow up on the redistricting, and we have used the same format that was used in prior cycles, and this is verbatim based upon the maps that I presented to the council. And if the council desires, I can read the short title.
Please do, sir.
Could I ask?
Sure.
I referenced the town of Millville and Ocean View, and I didn't have the map in front of us to show. Was there?
There was the same issue with the election districts. There was one other area that had that issue as well. So, actually, there were several people or places. So we were. There was no additional change from what was on the maps.
Doesn't mean. I mean, we could change. You're saying, or we can't change
It was creating a problem with the election districts.
Okay.
I asked Mr. Carter to go back and take a look at that, and I know Ms. Deaver had raised a question concerning Ellendale, and there was that same issue between State Road and 113, and it created a pocket in an election district.
And there was
that was the reason.
There was no attempt to bring Mrs. Deaver into my district because I
well, we attempted that, but it was going to create other issues.
You would like the people to get good service.
I mean, I figure if I'm going to try to help her along so much, I thought you might as well be in my district.
Well, but I'm so popular here in Georgia, you know.
Just trying to help.
Anything else, Mr. Moore? Would you please read the title, sir?
An ordinance to repeal ordinance number 1548 relating to councilmatic election districts and adopting councilmatic election districts.
Anyone care to introduce the ordinance?
I'll introduce it.
Mr. Phillips, introduce the ordinance. Next, Mr. Baker.
Next item is community development and housing rehabilitation report. And with us today, we have Mr. Bill LaCates and Brad Whaley. To give a report on their activities during the year.
Good morning. We also have Miss Brandy back there. Bennett. She's hiding back there with
there,
us.
She's far back. She can get
very
it.
Important ingredient and person in our system. Along with Mike Jones and Dale McDowell and Brad assistant and Nicole Reddick, our secretary. All of them work extremely hard. Today, gentlemen and ladies, I'm here, or Mr. Whaley and I are here, to introduce the new CDBG, although it's not new, but it is a new year, and so we're sort of kicking off the new year. We have Mr. Chip Guy will help us do the video. I will go ahead and get started. The CDBG is an acronym for Community Development Block Grant, as most of you know. The Housing Authority has asked us to kind of go over more details this year in some of the public hearings, and all this isn't a public hearing. We will be starting them in the next few months. The program has been used by the county to assist low and moderate income homeowners with rehabilitations to keep their homes up to code since the early 1980s. Mr. Whaley will have a report about how much funding we have received. On average, we do get about $1 million. That also, we can do sewer and water hookups and accommodations of condemned properties, and we have utilized all those activities under the county's grant and the town's grant over the past years. It is owner-occupied homeowners, and we do secure a lien so that if that house is sold in 5 or 10 years, depending on their age, and it is for 62 and older, a 5-year lien, and 10 year for 62 and under, we secure that funding amount with a lien so that we can reuse it if they were to sell a property to make a pretty much any amount of money that left over that should come back to the program. So if we have a 17.5 put into it, they would have to pay us back whatever year it is that allocation. We have received less and less of those in the past year. The CDBG grant application process begins annually in October, and as we are here today, we start send out letters. We are in the process of doing that with our administrators. Should be going out in the next 2 weeks. We send it to all the municipalities and ask them basically, and at the council's wishing, of course, of if they would like our assistance. We do this as a service to the towns and the small community pockets throughout the county, something that the county and my staff does. We will have the public hearings in December and January, and also have comments. We will then spend December and February compiling the necessary data and documentation to write the grant itself, and Mr. Whaley will go more in detail over that. We will administer the grant in each of the towns and choose the targeted areas. I'm not reading this verbatim because it is up here, and I think council has their handouts. And I have more handouts if the public would like. And then in May, the Housing Authority will go over with the review panel their final decision on who gets what. And they do make the final decision. We'll put about 15 to 17 applications in, and of course all of them don't get funded. As I say, we will be back for the official public hearing. We finished that, the last one, and that's generally the mid-January now. We have pushed it back a little bit. We will start with all the towns or municipalities first and get through all of them once we receive the letters back. And then the final award letters will go out about in June, which we received this year. This year, there's a few new grant features or guidelines this year, and they spell it out in the new, which Council President Mr. Vinson received, in the program guidelines that they send out to all the towns. This year, they would give bonus points for jurisdictions for an application that basically since it goes in census tracts in minority concentrated areas. We have always managed to do that anyway with our strong communities to stay in line. So as far as bonus points for that, we would receive them and have been anyway. And there will be no liens in 012 this new grant year for water and sewer hookups or emergency home repairs for $3,500 or less. We kind of went over with the Housing Authority with that to just discuss it. Just previously 25, and because of the cost escalating and going up a little bit, we thought it should go a little higher. Basically, it's that most of those liens would go off in 2 to 3 years anyway. The water and sewer is in many cases is the county's engineer projects, and we kind of do that because most of them are our own projects, and we really didn't want another lien put on it, the property. And then the new manufactured housing units, we can go up to 20 years now. Before, it was 10 years, and it was really hard to find a replacement that was really suitable for something 10 years or less. And 20 years, we can still find a very livable replacement unit that we can put in there and save some money. Before, we would strictly have to rehab them the best we could. And as most of you know, that would not really bring sufficient and make it up the code, because they only allowed us $15,000. So it would make sense to buy a newer model, and particularly in some of the parts of summer homes, we find that they want to get rid of them and upgrade the model. And they're fairly new because they've hardly been used. We've had those sometimes come to us and want to know if we could buy them. We only replace about one or two a year, so it's not a big deal. And many times it's emergency. In the last case, when we were up here, it was an elderly lady that in Millsboro, where the tree during the snowstorm 2 years ago fell on her. And we ruined the whole property, which we ended up replacing that. So that's pretty much the new guidelines, and Mr. Whaley will go more in depth with all the what we have been doing.
Okay. Well, what is the need for CDBG in Sussex County? The primary need is just the large number of substandard homes we have throughout the county. The county and local communities have over 6,000 homes in need of repair. The total number of people that we have currently on our community development list, it exceeds 1,100. We have 708 people on the countywide list, and then over 400 people on the list waiting for in the towns and the rural communities. This represents a 32% increase since 2007. We're just continuously getting more calls, and our lists keep growing, and our funds hasn't grown a lot to help, so we try to do the best we can. Some of the reasons for the list, or some of the reasons for the problem with the housing, is the aging housing stock. And this has become pretty obvious with the manufactured homes. We have a lot of older manufactured homes in Sussex County, and there are a lot of them from the 80s and are starting to fall into disrepair. Weather's been another major issue. The snowstorm we had back in January of 2010, we had two snowstorms, one right on top of the other. They caused a lot of damage to mobile homes. We had, probably as Bill mentioned, we had 8 to 10 homes collapse completely. We have just 100 more that were damaged. It also damaged just the average shingle roof with the ice damming with the snow sat on it for so long. So they didn't always see it right away. It's something that's kind of popping up years later with leaks. Of course, the economy, as we all know, has been an issue too. It's caused a lot of problem. And one of the problems is it's we find it less likely that families are able to help family members out. You know, when things are tight, you know, they're not as likely to be able to help their parents or grandparents with rehab work. Property taxes is another issue. We have many people who have been on our list that were unable to serve because they have unpaid property taxes. So we just kind of, we don't take them off the list, but we just tell them, you know, we need to get that taken care of. The next page, where's CDBG helped? We've really helped throughout the whole county, but I've got some specific lists. The community of Ellendale, which is basically the whole Ellendale sewer district, has received $1,288,000 over the last 10 years, basically for housing, rehab, sewer hookups, and we did help some with the sewer line that the county installed. Coverdale Crossroads has received $956,000 in the last 11 years, primarily for housing rehab. We do a lot of wells, occasionally some septics. West Rehoboth has received $635,000 over the last 19 years. Some of that goes way back to when they were putting the infrastructure in. We helped with the infrastructure, and we helped with the hookups. In 2010, we did like 6 rehabs in West Rehoboth community. And 2009, we did 4 demos. The community of Poly Branch, we've done over $350,000 worth of work in there in the last 10 years. Pinetown, we've done over $133,000. Just in 2009 was the last time we really worked in Pinetown. We did $90,000. We did 7 rehabs with $90,000. And then we've worked the Lucas Development, Mount Joy, Leighton Davis Road, Oak Orchard, and then we've worked in every town. We've worked Laurel, Seaford, Bridgeville, Milton, Milford, every single town throughout the county. The current year, we received $1,033,000 to do housing rehabilitation. To date, we have about 45% of those funds under contract or in process. We're writing them up. Mike Jones does a great job with that, so he's kept very busy
taken care of that. The next couple pages are just some examples of some work that we've done throughout the county. These are homes that we've rehabbed in the Millsboro area. And you can see we came in and this was young lady, a single parent, and we put the new roof on. We did quite a bit of work on the inside of the house. This house had been in this family for some time, and she was incredibly happy with that we were able to help her with this. And the next one's very similar. This is a house in the Mount Joy area where I think the lady actually wrote council a letter about this. Her grandfather built this house probably back in the 40s, and she's trying to live in it in the state it's in. It's just gotten to such bad shape it was very hard, and our contractors went in and rehabbed the house. Now it's very livable. So to the last page, I think that's all of it. Another issue that's been very useful, since 2004, the county council has given us funds to use as an emergency backup to the CDBG, and that's been a huge help. Over this particular year, county council gave us $60,000, which was an increase of $30,000 over the previous year funding. And since the program was designed, council has given us, our office, over $595,000, and we've assisted 108 households with that funding. And then probably the single biggest thing is the match that the county council provides with the CDBG program, so we can actually receive this CDBG funding. This particular year, the council matched over $160,000 in administrative funding, which our office uses to do the work with the CDBG program. And it allows us to help many people throughout the county. And this year's funding, combined with the previous year's 10 years funding, has allowed us to use over $16 million in CDBG and home funding to help the low to moderate people throughout the county. And we'd just like to thank the council for that and just tell you how much we appreciate it, and the homeowners that we work with are very appreciative.
We will take questions or any comments. It is the planning part of the new year. As I said, we will start, and we have always used housing rehabilitation as our main activity because of our waiting list. And if there's any suggestion or comments at this time, be glad for council.
Comments or questions from council?
I just have a question. Mr. Deaver. If you do rehab a house and they want to sell it the next year, we have a lien on the house. How long does that lien last? 3 years?
Ten years.
It depends on the age of the homeowner.
In other words,
if they're 62 or older, it's a 5-year lien. If they're 62 or under, it's a 10-year lien. And basically, it's just prorated, so they'll have to pay back. But we'll say with a 5-year lien, 20% comes off what they would have to repay if they sold it. Good. And it just goes down to a zero balance.
Mm-hmm. Any more questions, Mr. Cole?
How do you see the impact with all these foreclosures out there, where the banks are sitting on all these properties and they're just basically in disrepair, getting worse every day? And we have maybe 6,000 homes today in need of repair.
That's estimated 30,000, and we generally don't even hit that. We go about 20. So yeah, there's probably more than that when they did that survey. But
are you all predicting there's going to be just an uptick in need and expanding on whatever the number is, whatever the crazy number is, it's going to get bigger and bigger, faster and faster.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, there's right now the banks are just, what I understand, is letting them just sit there.
Yeah, they're just
And so they're deteriorating. And all the new programs kind of come out. The NSP has been big help, but, you know, we didn't get
It's just a Band-Aid on a huge problem.
Absolutely. Yeah. So they're sitting there and definitely going to be creating more work and extremely cost higher in the future.
Any more questions from council?
Yeah, I do have a community that's, they're served by cesspools, individual cesspools, and I think NREC's going to have to come down on that at some point. But we do finance new septics, but isn't there state funding also for that type of thing? But this is going to be a large scale issue in one of my communities, and I'm just wondering how can we respond to that, or as, you know.
Well, Yes, if we get to them and put in a target, there's a target area for that. Mm-hmm. Historically, they will want us to go to Denrec because they have their program.
Okay.
And that's one of our requirements because they're, as you said, just in the one community, mm-hmm. there's a number out there of septic problems.
Yes.
And of course, our engineers are doing a tremendous amount of more and more putting online, which is a big help. But
these people are not going to go anytime soon.
No, that's what there's so many areas. If it's an area where we could get to them, like a Pine Town, or if you have a designated area, we could certainly try to put an application in for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they would probably say, use Denrec funding first,
right.
And that is
okay.
a loan. That's one of
that's
the problems
loan.
Too, because
yeah.
most of them can't afford. But you know, we could be willing to work with them if you tell them to get up with us, and we could put an application in.
The
for
entire
that.
Community. I mean,
well, they would probably look at it as a housing yeah. need, okay. but it would be probably four or five at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
okay.
Again. I would want to talk to Denrec and the state to make sure. I mean, because with one million two a year, that would wipe out. I mean, we've had the one that they're requiring a lot of mounds, and it was $25,000.
The most expensive one we had
was $25,000.
Well, for one system, for one house, it was actually yeah. What they called a peat moss system. It was probably one of the last houses in Sussex County that didn't have indoor plumbing, and mm-hmm. that's
yeah. And these folks have their cesspools very close to their water source, which is you know wells. So we've got some real it's coming big problem. Okay.
Any more questions from council? Mr. Baker.
Yes, just one quick item to supplement what Bill said. The county does have some limited funds that we can use to help with septic, major septic repairs. And if they are, you know, there is an income, it is income based. So it's for lower income individuals to help with those costs. And but if it is a whole area, I think what Mr. LaCate said makes more sense that we apply for that area mm-hmm. and then, you know, and then take
apply
a look
to Denrec
at it.
Is what you're saying?
We would be glad to take a look at it, you
yeah.
know, if it's...
Okay.
Why don't you
I'm not sure what area it
is,
but
and then they can
yeah. maybe
deal
we can
with
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
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 Okay, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You have a good day. Mr. Baker, Mr. Report.
First item is Delaware State Police report for August. As per the attached reports, State Police in Sussex County handled 4,051 traffic arrests as well as 1,426 criminal arrests during the month of August. Columbus Day holiday, county offices will be closed on Monday, October 10th. In honor of Columbus Day, offices will reopen at 8:30 on October 11th. And the county council meeting will remain on the normal schedule at 10 a.m. on October 11th. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Did the police ever tell us who it is that's working, you know, for Sussex County and where they're based? Did we ever have a list of troopers' names and locations so that we know who they are? I mean,
I don't have a list of names and locations. However, they have assured me that they have 180 State Police based in the county right now, and that they will have at a minimum of 183 by the end of this calendar year.
That's our total.
They have
compliment.
Another class mm-hmm. that is starting, which is this quick class of made up of members of the law of other law enforcement agencies that have applied for the State Police.
Mm-hmm.
So they think that roughly runs a month. And they should have meet the 183, and hopefully you can go over that
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
by the
Good.
End of the calendar year.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. More questions, Mr. Baker?
Thank you.
Mrs. Webb?
Thank
bond
you.
Bond refinancing report.
Just have a couple of quick notes on the progress of the bond refinancing project. We are going to do an advertised request for proposal for the underwriter services. And that will start running tomorrow for the next two consecutive weeks. and I anticipate to be back the week of October 24th. The 25th is the council date for an anticipated notification of recommending a successful firm that will then move us on into the sale.
Okay. Any questions, Mrs. Webb? Mm-hmm. Mike Izzo, Airport Wetlands Mitigation, bid award and action engineering contract amendment one.
Good morning. I have two items on the agenda this morning, and they are both, as Mr. Vinson pointed out, in regards to the wetland mitigation project. The first is in regard to the actual bid award for our contractor. We had actually opened up bids back in August, and at that time we had 10 bidders on the project. The low bidder was a firm known as Goethe Miller and Associates of Trapp, Maryland. The second low bidder was Bunning and Mary Construction Corporation of Shelbyville, Delaware. Goethe Miller was the low bidder, as indicated. However, they did not have a bid bond attached with their bid. As it came, we learned later, they actually didn't even pick up the plans and specifications until the day before the bid opening. So they submitted a bid. They did not provide a bid bond. And even some of their numbers were a little sketchy. It just so happens that the Bunning and Mary Construction Corporation is located only a quarter mile from the actual wetlands mitigation site. Even with that, Goethe Miller's bid for excavation and embankment was significantly lower than Bunning and Mary's bid. And the question is, well, how can they do it cheaper than a company that's located right adjacent to the site? So we called Mr. Goethe Miller in, sat down with him, and we asked him questions, asked him about acquiring the bid bond, and we established a date of September 13th where he would provide the bid bond. He would give us his financials regarding to his firm, you know, support that he had the ability to do the work, and also provide references, because in our face-to-face meeting, he indicated he had a long record of working on wetland mitigation projects. Well, as it got closer to September 13th, we still hadn't heard back from Mr. Goethe Miller on anything, and we tried to contact him, and our phone calls went unreturned. Finally, on September 13th, he did contact me and indicate that he did not have the ability to acquire a bid bond, and using his words, he was no longer interested in pursuing the project. So seeing that, we have determined that the Goethe Miller and Associates bid is non-responsive, and we would recommend that the bid award be made to Bunning and Mary Construction Corporation. Now, one thing I have to alert the council to. When we acquired our FAA grant back in September, it was based upon the Goethe Miller bid. And the Bunning and Mary bid is approximately $70,000 higher. However, we are eligible to acquire a 15% grant amendment, and should we acquire that grant amendment, which we can't really do to the end of the project at this point, then the Bunning and Mary bid is actually under the 15%. So we'll actually have to get a grant amendment of some less than 15% to cover the Bunning and Mary bid. But that is a step we have to go through.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Rizzo?
Motion. Be it moved, based upon the recommendation of the Sussex County Engineering Department, that the bid for Sussex County project number 11-06, Sussex County Airport Wetland Mitigation Project, received from Goethe Miller and Associates, be designated as non-responsive, and the bid be awarded to Bunning and Mary Construction Corporation of Shelbyville, Delaware, at the base bid amount of $420,813, contingent upon receipt of approval from the FAA.
I'll make the motion.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver, second.
Second.
Mr. Phillips, any questions on the motion?
Would you say 15%?
We are eligible to acquire a grant of 15% in excess of the total project cost. The grant that we accepted in September was for $541,000. If you add 15% on top of that, we could go up to a maximum project cost of $622,000.
Okay. I was thinking you was talking about the first bid.
Now, yeah, and I know that was confusing, and I wasn't sure if I should go into all the details of that or not.
You said 15% was really it's better than 25% there.
Right, because there's county employee costs, administrative costs incurred, there's engineering costs, inspection costs, and then there's some other related costs. For example, we had to do archaeological survey, and that's another cost. So when you add the 15% on top of all the cost.
I see where you got it from. Okay.
Any more questions on the motion? Now we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Okay. The second part of the equation is the extension of a contract amendment with we had with Axiom Associates of Georgetown, Delaware. They were our engineering consultant for the design of the project. Now, as we move into construction, it's not the standard inspection that we do of a contractor like we would if you're putting pipeline in the ground. In this case, the wetland consultant actually works and directs the contractor how to perform the work. The grading's pretty straightforward. But one of the things that the wetland consultant has to do is determine the groundwater conditions once the grading is done. And if we need to dig a little deeper in a certain area to create the correct conditions to allow the wetland plannings to proceed, that's the type of work that's being anticipated by the wetland consultant during the contract. Also, the EPA requires that we do a 4-month, a 10-month, and then annual reporting for a period of time after the wetlands are created. And we have it set up within our wetland grant that at least the first 3 years of all those wetland reportings are covered by the grant. So the contract amount is $61,582 to do the normal inspection work, but also the advanced wetland consulting work and the reporting of monitoring reports that need to be turned into the EPA for a 3-year period.
Any questions, Mr. Rizzo?
Be it moved based upon the recommendation of the County Engineering Department that the Sussex County Council authorizes its president to execute contract amendment number 1 with Axiom Engineering LLC of Georgetown, Delaware, to provide construction administration and wetland monitoring for Sussex County project number 11-06, Sussex County Airport Wetland Mitigation Project at a cost not to exceed $61,582.08.
Make a
motion. Second motion, Mrs. Deaver, second, Mr. Cole. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, Mr. Rizzo.